Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations stance point.
Kayabina Simelet that I kickem, applica kemily ridley, what a bomi, what a pamina did you ridley, a what a ear, a tadakasia. That was the language of the Meridian people. The Meridian people are my people from the Torres Strait, the top eastern side. And in my language of the Meridian people, I acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands in which we're on. And I also acknowledge the elders from the past, from the present, and from those who will come after as well. And acknowledging that I'm currently broadcasting from the beautiful lands of Meganjin and the Yagara Turrbal people. And I want to extend that respect and acknowledgement to the areas in which you are from and listening to today. So welcome back. This is another episode of Let's Talk Black Art on Triple A Māori Country 98.9 FM. I'm your host, Will Power Ui, and this is the show where we dive deep into First Nations art and culture, you know, from music to storytelling to visual arts and everything in between. And today I'm really excited for the show that we have today. I feel really privileged personally to be talking to the one and only Isaac Drandich. And Isaac is a director among many things, including the head of First Nations Media at the Queensland Theatre, but also right now very much into a new production that's out called Dear Son, where he's the director and the co-adapter of this theatre production. And this is out in the Queensland Theatre now up until the 19th of July. So stay tuned to listen to more about the show and to get to know Isaac. But yeah, without further ado, I'm going to ask, Isaac, how are you today? Welcome.
Thanks, Will. Yeah, no, I'm feeling really good. I was up early this morning, went down for the Queensland Indigenous Tourism conference this morning. So had breakfast and caught up with a lot of mob down there, part of NAIDOC celebrations. And yes, I'm feeling on top of the world this morning.
Yes, happy NAIDOC. Yeah, it's just such a crazy busy week, but in all the best possible ways, eh?
Yeah, true that. Good to catch up with mob, good to catch up with, you know, people I haven't seen for a little while and celebrate who we are.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as we would start any conversation, would you mind sharing a bit about who you are and who's your mob and, yeah, what you do a little bit?
Yeah, thanks, Will. So, Isaac Drandich, you got my name right. Thank you very much.
No,
and I'm a Noongar fella from southwest Western Australia, born and bred over that way. That's my mother's side. And on my father's side, I'm Croatian. So that's where the Drandich name comes from.
Deadly.
Yeah, and I currently live in Gimwe, up there in Cairns, with my beautiful wife, who's a Yirrindi woman, and also Miriam from the Comet.
Hey, relations there.
Yeah, that's right. Make this connection already with you. So I'm connected through my children and through her.
Yeah, deadly. Amazing. Thanks so much for sharing that. And, yeah, really can't wait to get into this yarn about, you know, what you're doing. And it's all very deadly stuff. But we normally like to start this show with a question called What's the Vibe? And it's really about capturing, like, an authentic feeling of how you are right now, whether it's good or not so good. So, Isaac, what's the vibe?
The vibe. Well... I've sort of been in this really sort of deep contemplative and reflective space recently with the work Dear Son. You know, the work's based on these real letters that have been written by real men to their sons and a couple to their fathers. So I'm in a really sort of gentle, reflective vibe these days.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing that. Really appreciate that. And, you know, personally for me and my vibe to go along with that, we mentioned that it's NAIDOC week this week and we're right in the middle or the beginning of it, really, but or in the middle of it, whichever way you want to look at it. And for me, like, I kind of feel a certain level of stress, because there are so many events, and you know, you want to go here. I want to go here. I want to go there. But unfortunately, I sometimes have to miss out on things because I'm only one person. I can't duplicate myself and go to all events, and it really just pulls on my heartstrings when I have to say no to like coming to some events. But also, really, really love and really feel excited about the events that I do go to, because what a time of the year for Mob. Just to see and connect with community on such a large scale. And, you know, I mean, I guess ultimately it's a little bit of mixed emotions. So many incredible, deadly things, but also got to practice that self-care and get what you can, like get to places where you can, and also respectfully acknowledge that maybe you'll be there next year. So that's my vibe this week. But, you know,
share,
thank
brother.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure people can relate.
Love starting the day with just a little check-in, a vibe check-in. That's really
cool. Look, honestly, we don't do that you know, too often, and even personally, for, you know, for me and growing up as a man as well, sometimes we're told that it's a shame factor to talk about, you know, how you're feeling and letting your emotions out so publicly. But you know, I'm here to break that down from however I can. But you know, honestly, you know, it's okay to struggle sometimes, and don't forget that there's this incredible deadly mob that you can lean into, whether that be you know, aunties, uncles, cousins, anyone in your community. But there's also some deadly organizations out there doing some incredible work that you can connect with as well. So if you're in the creative field, we've got Support Act, and they've got a wellbeing helpline, and they've got a dedicated First Nations line within that wellbeing helpline. So 1-800-959-500 for that one, and select option 3 to connect to that First Nations dedicated line. We also have Lifeline 131114 and 131376. But let's move on with the interview, because I'm really excited to get into some stuff around, you know, the work that you do, Isaac, and the work that you're currently doing at the moment with your new production, Dear Son. But I want to, before we get into that, come back to the beginning and really start with the origin stories and the influences. So my first question for you is, what kickstarted your career in the arts? What sort of drew you in initially to do what you do in this industry?
Yeah, look, I mean, stories of, you know, find a way to sort of connect with us. And my older sister, Shirley Hood, she's a stand-up comedian these days, but back in the day she was a theatre maker and an actor, and she used to drag me along to the theatre when I was quite young over there in Perth. And she didn't have to drag me for too long. I soon realised that the stories that were being told on stage reflected my own experiences. I was really fortunate to grow up in Perth, where we had quite a lot of Noongar theatre, written by Noongar people. And so I was able to see those stories reflected on stage and get a sense of how important those stories were, and how it is we use stories to connect with people and to basically to own the narrative, to change the narrative, which is an extremely powerful act.
Absolutely.
Through storytelling. And so that's what really sort of attracted me deep down to becoming a theatre maker. I was basically bribed by my sister, who was the coordinator for Indigenous programs at the West Australian Academy of Performing Arts over there. It's a one-year Aboriginal theatre course that still runs today. She needed an extra statistic. She needed 10 young people to make up the course so that it could become an accredited course. And so she had 9 people, and she asked me if I wanted to do it. And I said, absolutely not interested. And then she said, I'll give you $100 if you do it for at least 3 days. I said, yep, all right then. $100 is a lot of money in them days.
Yeah.
And I rocked up. And, you know, the rest is history, really. 20,
Yeah.
26, 7 years later, I'm still making theatre and still loving the opportunity to tell our stories, and to rewrite and challenge those sort of narratives that have been around, that have had a significant sort of a negative impact on our people for so long. You know, it's our responsibility, and it's our absolute pleasure to bring these stories to life on stage so that we can reach a broader audience.
Yeah, absolutely. And isn't that funny how, you know, sometimes you just don't plan to get an opportunity in a completely different world, and then you just end up falling in love with it, and it becomes something that it kind of shapes your identity almost. And yeah, what an incredible like process to go through. So I think it really, I guess, which is, let me know if you agree, but it really is about sometimes exposing yourself to these brand new opportunities, whether you're bribed or you're just interested in them, because you never know what can happen, really. Yeah, you never know where your passions can just explode into something.
That's right. That's right. And I felt like it was a calling. It was a calling for me. I mean, I had a, you know, I grew up pretty rough as well. You know, I was sort of mucking around in some circles over there in Perth. And, you know, as a young Noongar man, you know, I mean, when I was growing up there weren't a lot of opportunities around. So, you know, a lot of the families and cousins over there, you know, they sort of, you know, play AFL or they work in the mines. You know, one of the other sort of options is prison. You know, I mean, you know, it's being sort of profiled over there as young and black, but storytelling and theatre was a way where I was able to sort of express myself and I suppose tap into the emotional side and the real side of who I am. And so I think that sort of, that was being in the theatre and being in the business of storytelling allows me to be able to sort of go to those places in depth and speak about what I think is important for, you know, for myself, for my children, for my community.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, you know, that's just such a special, like, sort of yarn you're telling there around just the influences of the people around us and our connection and what we do and how it can shape and impact future generations, you know. And, you know, can you remember the time where you first started, you know, I guess the early gigs within the theatre space, and what were your sort of, how did you find that process of just starting in that space and creating your first earliest sort of gigs in theatre?
Yeah, I do remember some of the early gigs in theatre, and I was really ambitious. And I remember I had like one of these sort of what do you call them, epiphany sort of moments, or real sort of a wake up call one day. And I get these wake up calls every now and again, like serious wake up calls where it feels like it's like a divine intervention that happens. And I remember getting this one, and I'd done a bit of the acting course. I'd done the acting course, and then I was just bumming around for the next sort of year and a bit. And something sort of tapped me on the shoulder and went, "Hey, what are you doing? What are you doing with your life?" You know. And I thought, well, nothing. No, I don't have any skills, but I do have some acting skills. So I remember getting on the phone and sort of and you know, showing some initiative, and calling up a theatre company over in Perth and going, "Hey, you know, I'm available. I've got this experience. Have you got any jobs?" And I remember sort of getting the phone call a couple of weeks later, and I ended up getting the part in my first professional production, alongside, you know, people like Tim Minchin was in that work, Jeff Kelso, and a fellow by the name of Kelton Pell was unavailable for that work. So I moved in and got that first role. But it was, you know, I always felt like there was a deeper responsibility for the storytelling I think it, in the early days, certainly as an actor, I did have stars in my eyes. I wanted to, I wanted to do everything. I wanted to be on television and, you know, travel to the States and do all of that. And I suppose as I sort of, as I grew older, I realized that that there was an opportunity and a responsibility as someone that comes from a really long line of storytellers and story keepers, that there's a lot of work to do here at home in our own communities. So a lot of my background is, you know, working with Obituary Theatre Company, real sort of grassroots level work in Melbourne. And that was sort of my pathway from community through to sort of the state theatre companies now that I work for, and opera companies that I work for quite often. So it was an incredible journey, and a real sense that the story's bigger than myself.
Yeah, absolutely. Very well said, and thanks for sharing that. Like, you know, just the power of manifestation, and then, you know, the opportunities that come and the responsibility that we hold as well, and we feel, I think that's pretty much felt by a lot of people who work in the creative industries. Absolutely. Well, just before we get to Dear Sun, I was going to ask, so you've had some previous shows recently before Dear Sun, so sorry, 37, Dear Brother, and now Dear Sun. Was that a planned journey for you? Each experience shaped the next when it comes to those shows?
Certainly in terms of the way that those stories are told, I certainly learned from the previous experiences and how it is I can continue to apply the Noongar values that I was brought up with into the rehearsal processes for each of those works. But in terms of the sort of forward thinking around the programming of each of those works, which I'm in a position to curate and program these works at Queensland Theatre Company, no, I was, these works sort of come to me. They sort of land in my lap in some ways, they're quite masculine, these works.
Yeah.
They're men's stories.
Yeah.
And for some reason over the past sort of 6 or 7, 8 years really, I've had sort of a lot of men, a lot of male artists and writers and musicians approach me to work with them and to support them to tell their stories, which I'm you know, really humbled by and really privileged to do, and I think it's a calling. I think it's the country. I think it's country telling me, sort of what stories we need to be able to share with our communities.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the sort of nature of them falling into my lap and me not necessarily planning them, but through circumstance and through connections with people and through sort of odd meetings with people, that's how these sort of masculine works have come about.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, I think it's just so interesting, like, how life eventuates and those opportunities, even those little opportunities, become and grow into something so incredible. And I couldn't even imagine sometimes, you know, I suppose the responsibility that would be felt to curate, it's not the right word, but to facilitate that storytelling from that personal level to a theatre production. I suppose it could feel very heavy. But I want to, on that note, I'd love to talk about, you know, Dear Sun is about a collection of letters from fathers to sons. What was that process like of, you know, uplifting those and connecting those stories from those letters? I know you co-adapted this with John Harvey, but what I've also gathered is that it has been influenced by also the people who are involved with the entire production. Can you tell us a little bit about that process of adapting those letters into the show of Dear Sun?
Yeah, I mean, I remember picking up the book for the first time, and I was instantly drawn to the themes in the work and to the openness that each of the men sort of bravely venture into. Our first ever workshop we held in Gimoi. So I invited Jimmy Barney, Aaron Pedersen, Kirk Page, Aaron Faso and Trevor Jamieson up there to Cairns to come and start to sort of talk about the work. And we actually didn't pick up the book. We got to sort of talking about our own experiences as fathers and sons, and we found out things about each other that after 20 years of friendship, we've all known each other in the industry for many, many years, and we found out things about each other that we'd never known before. And these were really heartfelt stories. And the space that was created, that we created up there, it felt like a men's group. And so that experience John and I had with the group of incredible men, senior men in the artistic industry, but also cultural men as well, particularly Jimmy Barney and Trevor Jamieson, and their cultural backgrounds. It became the premise of our play. So we decided to set this play at a sort of gathering place known to many followers as a cookhouse that we see on the islands, we see up north, and we see in our backyards. And these are places where we gather, where we talk, where we sit around and sing songs, where we connect with each other. And so that became the sort of vehicle of setting it in a men's group at a cookhouse that we used in order to uplift these stories.
Yeah, well, I mean, that just, I guess it's blowing my mind a little bit because, I feel like it's not often that, just that vulnerability and that exchange of storytelling from an emotional point of view between fathers and sons is not always practiced within our communities. I've even noticed that, and even from personal experiences, and this show's really got me thinking about my relationship with my father, and what the letters would say if we had known where we would be now. Because yeah, I just feel like, and I cannot wait to get to the show to hear more about that. But yeah, it has really got me thinking about that. And have you found that? What has come to fruition in the form of Dear Son? Are you hearing a lot of these experiences? Has people been reaching out to you about their own experiences of their connections between fathers and sons? And have you heard about the inspiration from that point of view?
Oh, Will, we're having the most amazing response to this work. I've actually never seen anything like it. Really real, honest, raw responses from the audience, both from, Aboriginal, Torres Strait mob and non-Indigenous mob. They're all really deeply connecting with these stories. There's so many ways into this work, whether you're, it doesn't matter what background you are, everyone's got a father or doesn't have a father, or everyone's a son and everyone has family and everyone wants to communicate and speak in the way that we hear the men speak through these letters and the actors through these letters. The reaction has been overwhelming. The other night I was sort of introduced to a woman who was in tears, and she was in tears because she didn't realize and have an understanding of her own brothers. She's got several brothers. She didn't have an understanding of her own brothers' experiences, and that gave her an insight into the fragility of men. We might look hard on the exterior, but men do have a very soft spot deep down inside us. And some men carry that openly. Some men bury it a bit deeper. But I think from the experience of seeing the show, she understood her brothers for the first time in her life.
Wow. How powerful is that? That's incredible. I honestly cannot wait. I'm planning to come next week, but honestly, just from hearing about it and hearing even what you're saying now has really got me thinking about those types of things as well. And there's something, I was watching a video of the briefing planning, and there was a line that you said in there that kind of stood out to me, and it was about you're not directing actors, but you're directing energy. Can you share a little bit about, you know, what that sort of sentiment means and how that is translated through to your son?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one, Will, and I think it comes from a sort of deeply cultural place in terms of sort of facilitating as opposed to directing, but facilitating the song of the work. And it's a little bit like, that's what I hear as I hear a song. I don't necessarily hear sort of anything other than what sort of vibrates and hits me, has an impact on me. And if I hear a note that's a little bit out of place, then that'll be a conversation with the actors to see how it is we're able to sing together. And of course we know that singing as our practice was a huge part of the way that we told stories.
Absolutely.
And I think about it, and you remember, it goes into another place when we sing. The information and stories sit in another place within us when we sing songs. So it's different to when we speak. And some of that critical information that elders and our uncles, if they're taking us initiation business, and the information that we learn on how to survive from country, live with country, all of this critical knowledge that sometimes can be the difference between life and death. Let's face it. If you don't remember, then you could be in a bit of trouble.
Yep.
So I think, there's many reasons why we sung to each other, but it does help us remember, and it helps us sort of connect deeply with the story beyond a cerebral level, more a sort of in our guts.
Yeah, absolutely. I do feel like it's the frequencies that come out through the notes and the music that actually touches on to something in this spiritual realm. Absolutely. And, my background is in music, as we had a brief chat before the interview. And, I think that's what's made me fall in love with music, is because of the power of the messages that it contains and the frequencies, how it can connect to people on such a deeper level, on that spiritual level. And, honestly as well, I think just music has this, I always think about it like people create music. And if we're creating music, it's just like the power of manifestation in reality. And then the music also becomes a gift, and the gift should be shared. And the way that we share is through storytelling. And I think that's the mentality that I personally have when we perform music, is it's the storytelling, and it's the continuation, it's the connection to the emotions and to the spiritual and to the cultural. And it definitely seems like, Dear Son, and through your direction and the teams all together coming together, is expressing this. And it kind of also like reminds me of a really important point that I want to ask you about. As someone in the audience watching a show like Dear Son, Of course, we can see the final product and how deadly the production is, but there are so many key roles within the behind the scenes that really contribute towards bringing something like this sun to life. There's just, you know, from the lighting to the costume set design to the, you know, the creative director with, you know, I know you've got a couple of people even I've caught up with before and interviewed with Bala Patrick Mao and Delvin Cockatoo Collins. Can you share with us a bit about, you know, that vital role that the behind the scenes crew have that has played a role in connecting to that manifestation of the show?
Yeah, brother. Yeah, sing it into existence, eh?
Yes, absolutely.
Incredible. I mean, the rest of the creative team, the design team. I remember having a bit of a struggling one time. I was directing a story that come from Victoria when I was living there, and I have connections with the mobs there in Victoria. It was such a sort of deeply localized and important verbatim piece of theatre. And I had some sort of doubts about myself telling that story as the director. And I remember calling up one of my olders. He's like, "Don't call me older. I'm your older." And so I called up one of my olders. And I said, you know, I'm not sure whether I'm the right person to tell this story, whether if I made a mistake. And he was like, he just had a little chuckle. He had a little laugh. And he said, Isaac, the stories, you don't choose the stories that you tell. The stories choose you. And that philosophy has stayed with me. That belief has stayed with me ever since. And the creative crew that are around me and around this work, I know have something very, very special to contribute to the magic of the song, the magic of the production. And each of them comes from different places. Each of them has their own experiences, but each of them brings something unique to the work that I could never, ever have dreamed up or imagined without that collaboration. So I acknowledge my the creative team that worked with us on this. Kevin O'Brien from Hammond Island, Torres Strait Islander. Mm-hmm. Delvin Cockatoo Collins, of course, our costume designer with this work. David Walters, our lighting designer. Imiglu Fuller, but we call him Dad. Yeah, Deadly Ally. That's right. Will Hughes, our sound and sound designer and composer, and Patrick Mao worked with Will, and Eben Love from Cairns. Narendra Fala was our associate lighting designer, and Liam Mazza, my brother-in-law, he was our associate set designer, and also helped build the set. This construction is very handy with his hands, and also the assistant director, Tibian Wiles.
Deadly. Yeah, so many creatives that come together, in my personal view, have created magic. So that's, yeah, it's really, really amazing. And we're having a really deep, beautiful yarn about Dear Sun, and not only the show and the production itself, but how it come to fruition and the impact that it's having in community and the messages that it tells and the story that it tells. And I really love, you know, the messages around bringing that yarn around masculinity to the forefront, and you know, I guess maybe not in that stereotypical form, but more in showing that vulnerability of us as men and the masculinity as well, that we all have this soft spot, and also, you know, the magic that is Dear Sun and the show that's on at the moment, how the creative team has just brought this to life, and everyone has a role to play in sharing this yarn and storytelling. Now, I was going to ask Isaac, having now, like, the show has been out since the 28th of June, and it's running till the 19th of July, so pretty much in that middle, or just about into the middle part of production. And have you learnt any messages What have you learned any lessons so far into the journey of Dear Son being out now?
Yeah, I have. I've learned so much, and I've had a lot of reminders too, actually. You know, a lot of reminders of why we do this work, why theatre is a really powerful vehicle to tell our stories, how it can heal the impact that we're having with audiences and the sharing of their experiences with, you know, complete strangers has been an extraordinary sort of reaction. And it just reminds me that because of the impacts of colonization around the world, that this sort of idea of masculinity has been based on this sort of on terrible behaviors.
Yep.
And it's, you know, it's this sort of patriarchal, European sort of patriarchy that we've based sort of masculinity on because it gets a lot of coverage. It's in our media. It's in our, you know, it's everywhere we bloody look.
Yeah.
But that's not what I want to base my masculinity on.
Yeah.
That's not what I want my son to base his masculinity on. That's flawed, and that's their way. We've got another way of talking, another way of being with each other, another way of being with ourselves. And part of this work is I wanted to see that. I wanted to explore and find what that divine masculinity looks like.
Yeah.
I think we as the first peoples of the world, I think it lies closer to us. I think it's there. I think it's there with us. And that's like what happened in Cairns for us fellas. When we had the invitation stemmed from the book, Dear Son. And it was that book and the letters that these men wrote that started our conversations as fathers and as sons. So through that permission, through that example, we putting this on stage now hopefully encourages more men to start talking about what's really important in our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. Try to fight that shame as men to talk about, you know, our emotions and showing that vulnerability between father and son. Just what a beautiful way to spread that message through Dear Son. And I guess, you know, now I want to ask you around what happens next after Dear Son? Is there any sort of future plans around more of Dear Son? Is it going to expand? Is it going to go out to schools? Is it going to go international? I mean, I believe that us as black fellas and the arts and the storytelling that we have honestly can hold space on the global scale because, there's no other stories in the world that are like ours. So what's next for Dear Son?
Yeah, we're straight off the bat here. We close on the 19th of July. I think the actors have the day off on Sunday. They jump on a plane on Monday. We head down to Ghana country, down to Adelaide, and we are doing a sort of three or four week season in Adelaide next with the work, which is really exciting for us that the work gets to travel, gets to reach another community. And then we do have plans for next year. All of that will come to light. In the sort of next few months. Once we hear what the other theatre companies in the country are doing next year.
Definitely. I cannot wait to hear. Sounds like big news. I kind of randomly just got a thought as well. Like, we're talking about the future and where it's going to go, which is really exciting, but it also gave me a flashback. And as a musician myself and in different gigs that I've done in the past, I always sometimes remember the feeling of that energy after the first show. So just very quickly, how was the vibe after opening night of Dear Son?
Oh, I mean, an incredible vibe, incredibly emotional and celebratory all at the same time. It was a really, really complex feeling that was going on inside my little tummy, inside my big heart. It's actually the other way around, no. Yeah, it was a beautiful audience, beautiful blend of having our mob in the audience as well as, allies and supporters of Black Theatre. And it was a really special occasion.
Yeah, I could imagine. Well, that's so exciting. And it's so exciting to hear that it's going to be traveling around to Kaurna country, at least. So, Mob and Kaurna country, get prepared and keep an eye out to where you can get the tickets and go and watch Dear Son. And I guess finally, I guess the future of Dear Son, and not only that, but beyond that, have you got any advice, really? For any people who are inspired or are emerging directors that want to be a part of future shows like Dear Son, any advice?
Advice. Well, look, the stories always come first. Trust in country. When you get lost, as a creative, sometimes we can tend to overthink things when all we need is just a little bit of stillness. And country always provides. Not only does it provide, sustenance and food, but it also provides spiritual nourishment. And always keep the, if I think a lot of fellows use binungs, keep them open, and trust your instincts, trust your intuition, because that's certainly my deepest asset, is my intuition, and that really guides me as a creative person.
Absolutely, that's some deadly advice there. Thank you so much for sharing that. So, just as we are heading to our end of the show, Dear Son, it's a deeply moving and an unmissable show that speaks straight to the heart and it reminds us all that there's no shame in love, softness in being seen. And it's playing at the Queensland Theatre right now. Go to queenslandtheatre.com.au and look for Dear Son to get your tickets. And they're showing from evenings on Monday to Wednesday, 6:30 p.m., and Thursday to Saturday, 7:30 p.m. I want to take this moment now to just show my gratitude. Isaac, thank you so much for joining me on the show, and thanks for having a yarn about Dear Son. It's just, it's just such a special show, and I absolutely cannot wait. I want to come next week to see Dear Son here, and I'm so excited to see it. But Isaac, thank you for for being here with us and sharing.
Thanks, Will. And I felt like I was Jarnan to my brother in my lounge room. You made the experience really, really wonderful for us. So, yeah, thank you. And thanks for your work too, brother, and everything that you do.
Nah, thank you. Appreciate that. And yeah, before we wrap up the show, I just want to give a quick shout out to the people who sponsor this show. And that's particularly the Community Broadcasting Foundation and Brisbane Pride. And don't forget to follow us on socials at AAA for more news and community events and other deadly shows. And all the other deadly Let's Talk shows that we have here on AAA. Don't forget that you can also listen back to this episode and other episodes on the website, AAA.org.au. You can also download the iHeartRadio or the Community Radio Plus apps and search for AAA. But that's it. That's us for now. Catch us next time for another deep dive into First Nations art, creativity, and culture. Until then, stay strong, stay deadly, and happy NAIDOC Week.
No more whispering in our mind.
Let's talk Monday to Friday at 9 a.m. on AAA Murray Country, the National Indigenous Radio Service, and iHeartRadio. You can catch up on AAA.org.au, proudly supported by the Community Broadcast Foundation.